Hello, I just finished recording an episode of a podcast and I'm doing something that I don't do too often, if ever. I am recording an intro to an episode after I finished recording that very episode. And the reason I'm doing this is because this episode that you're going to listen is different than the other episodes. The subject is maybe not exactly in line in what I always do in this podcast, which is talk about science and conservation. But it is very important to me, and I think it is very important to a lot of people, or it should be important to a lot of people, and that is the crisis of our attention span, the crisis of being able to focus on anything, which impacts the quality of conversation we're having, and by extension, it impacts the constant conflict and inability to work together and agree on difficult subjects. We see this conflict everywhere. Whatever you touch on, there is some conflict and some tension. And as you know, I spend a lot of time on social media. So I also kind of firsthand got into the problems this is causing. And those of you who are spending a lot of time on social media, you know what is the quality of conversation there. And I would encourage you to be less on social media. So this episode is important to me personally. This is a subject that I work on and think about a lot recently. And obviously we're talking about the book that was written by our guest in this episode, Emmanuel Rose, who was already our guest in one of the previous episodes. So I just want to share this as a meaning of introduction, not specifically science or conservation, but I would really, really, really encourage you to listen to this episode and check yourself to see, not so much if you have a problem, because I know you have, because we all have, like we said on the podcast, but to what extent and whether it is not affecting what you do. So yeah, that's it. That's really something that I want to share with you straight from me to you, dear listener. Yeah, focus more, get distracted less, and see if you can improve the quality of your life and of your mind that way. And listen to this episode. It is really good, in my opinion. Enjoy. Emmanuel, welcome to the show. Welcome again to the show.
Thanks a lot, Tommy. I'm glad to be back and looking forward to chat with you again today.
Yeah, absolutely. And we are here to talk about your book, The Seven Principles of the Magic Rock. And then there's a subtitle, How Solitude in Nature Anchors Your Mental Health, Improves Your Leadership Skills, and Unleashes Your Creativity. And man, I was reading that book and I was thinking, this is very important. This is very important for everybody. And I would like to share that with our listeners and viewers, because you're taking... So in general, you're talking about, you know, how our lifestyle is kind of destructive really to our mind. But your angle for all the things, how to fix it, is very much in nature, related to nature, which is main thrust of this podcast, talking about the nature, talking about the conservation. And then when people are thinking right and they in the nature and they can appreciate the nature, then they're more likely to protect it and you know, pay attention essentially. So that's an introduction, my introduction. Maybe you can tell us, you know, what was your motivation to write that book, how it started, how you decided, because you wrote before, you wrote the books for kids, we had a conversation about the multi-generational outdoors teaching. And so that's a little bit different. So what was the motivation for it?
I'm a marketer by profession, and I was working on a book, and I published a book called Authentic Marketing to Generation Z. And these kids are between like 10 and 26, 27. And as I dug into the psychological components of the marketing, I noticed the brain chemistry that is triggering activity from them being on screens and being connected to the internet and social media. And I realized that the research is showing there's a massive mental health problem in that generation because of the technology addiction. And then reflected back to, growing up and what my childhood was like and how we use technology and even still use it as a tool versus as an entire experience of the world. And so I'm like, well, if I'm going to be part of the problem here in promoting this type of marketing, it's incumbent upon me to do something to act as an antidote for this also. And realizing that it's not just those kids that are having this issue. We're all falling prey to, at least the United States, to constant input from social media and TV and the internet. And so,
yeah, it's same in Europe, same in Great Britain, same in Ireland, same in Europe. I see the same thing. It is, you know, mildly terrifying. Even if, you know, I do a lot of social media on for the podcast, and I had to catch myself and be way more structured and disciplined about social media that I do for the podcast, because it just drags you in. You don't even know, like, someone sends you a message on Instagram and you go and you're going to see what that message, because maybe that's the person you want to, you know, get on a podcast or something. And the moment you swipe out of messages, you straight away have like something given to you that is like, oh, and then you go like, oh, I already spent like 5 minutes on this thing without even planning, without even like, it's terrible.
It's the dopamine drip. And so this is all biochemistry, and the social media platforms, the people who run those know this, and their goal is to keep us trapped onto those as long as possible, because longer our dwell time is, then the better their advertising rates can be, and on and on and on, right? And so my focus is that we need to be more human. And by being more human, that is to put the phone down, turn it off, get out of cell range, and spend time just sitting, number one. Then observing, looking around and see what's going on around you. And then, you know, there's ways to deepen that experience once you start to participate in nature, in the real world, and in activities that are outdoors.
Yeah, absolutely. And we get into that. I was just like to say, and you know, like usually I'm probably gonna be talking in this podcast more than usual, because it is like so like important to me. And something that I really think a lot, you know, like, again, I'm a lot of on Twitter. It's because it's been great for the growth of my podcast. And I see people, some of them used to be the guests on the podcast. And I noticed that like they're constantly on Twitter. They're replying, and they're really from the morning till the evening. And I just like, I know how your life looks like.
That's tough.
And I'm thinking it is terrible, because you have this thing where your brain is shifting certain actions to the subconscious aspect of it. And then you end up in this situation where you just like wake up almost from daydream, having your phone in your hand and scrolling. And it's like, I don't remember pulling that phone out of the pocket. I don't remember thinking about it. Just happens. Is it just reflex? And the moment you realize you're in this, like, I was pissed off. It's like, how it was possible that I got to this point, right? There is like, I'm almost losing control. And something that you, I think that you mentioned that in the book, but it's worth just saying that I remember reading a research. And by the way, in your book, you put a lot of references to research, a book, to further reading for people who are interested, which I thought was brilliant. Because the book is not long, it's easy to read and it's quick to read, but there is a lot of material for further reading. So I remember a research where the researcher said that when you scrolling through social media, the same regions of your brain lights up as when gambling, when you do the slot machine where you pull the lever, except you're not pulling the lever, you just swipe down. But it's the same thing. You swipe down, you pull the lever, and the thing shows up, and your brain wants, like, win, right? And those wins are replies, are heartbeats, are retweets. These are your wins in social media. And it's just massively terrible. I was just asking you, like, what would be your advice first for someone who's reading, listening to this, and goes, like, yeah, I think we have a problem here. What would be your advice how to catch yourself first on this, like how to realize the scale of the problem and if you have a problem?
Yeah, I would say we probably all have the problem, right? So me included. And so the way that I manage it is I schedule, just like what you're talking about, right? I'm saying, hey, these are my work hours, and I'm early guy. I get up at 3:30 in the morning, do my hour of meditation, get into my day, and then by 2 o'clock, I'm done. And then it's closed down the electronics, and my wife and I play golf if we're in town, or I'll go out in the backyard with the dog and sit in the chair and watch the wind blow through the trees. And those are the work days, right? But it's scheduled, and you have to have that amount of discipline to persevere against the constant siren song of the electronics.
Yeah, that's a good thing. And you know, that's what I'm doing with social media. I'm like scheduling the times where I'm allowed to go in and check and reply. And I think that the other tip that I might offer is almost say to yourself, like now I am closing, you know, my laptop, or I'm closing my work hours. And this is the conscious act of like, I'm not getting there. And I think that's also important for work, right? Because there is like, we're talking about social media and all those things. But I think a lot of people have similar problem. Well, not even in air quotes, it is a problem with work where they cannot stop, right? There's a work email all the time and they're online all the time. And then you spit up your laptop in the morning and there's like emails from, you know, like 2 a.m. Like, I know that person. They're not that early riser. There's like something is wrong, right? That's also a part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. There's two things, right? One is that you have to schedule. The other thing is that when you do put it away and go and do something else and rest and recuperate, even for an hour or 2 hours of a walk with the dog in the park, or if you are lucky enough to be near moving water or the ocean, to go and spend some time with your own thoughts, then it's rejuvenating, and then you come back refreshed and more creative. And if you can expand that over 3 or 4 days or a week without that connection, then most of us have experienced that coming back and being really recharged and ready to take on the work that we do.
Your productivity is increased massively. Like someone said, that's a well-known quote. And by the way, I just want to also, you know, praise your book. You have a lot of like every chapter starts with a quote. And then you have a quote from Marcus Aurelius, Carl Jung, Wolfgang von Goethe, Sun Tzu, John Muir. It was fantastic. I really enjoy it because each quote kind of like a leads to the chapter. And, you know, we tend to like, so someone said that focus is your currency. And that is why everybody is fighting for your focus. And you just change yourself cheap when you paying attention to all those things. And you're talking about your book about fear of missing out, and you just need to be like everywhere. What would be your advice to deal with all that, because I am sure, and I'm, like you said, we are guilty and we all have this problem. When you, especially in the beginning, when you said like, okay, I'm this is my work day done, or my, you know, use of electronic devices is done, you have this niggle in the back of your head, like, oh, but like maybe someone replied, maybe someone sent me an email. How do you combat that?
Well, I think one way is that by being involved in activities that demand attention, right? Could be practicing shooting your bow, or it could be being in the gym, or it could be running, or, you know, playing golf, whatever those things are, where you have to have physical focus as well as mental focus. And then there is a level of discipline that a human being needs in order to, you know, not be morbidly obese, not to drink to excess, you know, not to smoke cigarettes constantly, you know, not to be on social media. Those are all similar problems. And so we have to summon up the discipline as a grown up adult to quiet down the voice. You know, a lot of some teachers, John Young, who was a student of Tom Brown, who part of the survival community here in the United States, he would say, yeah, that voice, you just wrap it up in duct tape and put it in the corner.
That's it. Yeah. And after a while, it goes away. And after a while, it goes away. You're just like, you're not touching, you know, like over the weekend. You said like, okay, it's Friday, you know, 3 p.m. That's me for social media. And then you have this kind of like the back of your head till the end of the day. And then maybe on Saturday, it's just less. On Sunday, you forget about it. Come Monday, I don't even want to go there. I don't even want to log in. It's like, Joe, I just know you have all these like, all these people that are like, all those things. It's like, I don't even want to go there. It's so much more fun to focus on productive things, like you said, focus on whether physical activity or something else, you know. And it is, there's a good research, there's a good scientific research that it literally has either negative or positive physical changes in your brain. So like, for example, the deliberate practice, or someone talking about the deep work, where you're actually focusing on something, you're switching off the notifications and everything. I think whether it's a fat or it's a protein called myelin that builds around the neurons, and it makes those neurons fire better together. So that's why you do a lot of, for example, mathematics and your calculus and whatever. After a while, you're good on calculus no matter what, because the areas of your brain are firing better. So why not go into that, like a mastery of something instead of.
Yeah. So yeah, you're right. It is about a focus, and I keep going back to the idea that these things are tools that we need to learn to use, and not dominating our brain and our lifestyle. And the real secret is to find places where you don't have cell service, don't have internet, and spend time there. And then you've taken away, you've deprived yourself of that tool, and you can then focus on either doing internal work and values clarification and journaling and art, meditation, or where you're scouting for the next hunting trip, or you're watching the river go by and seeing what the bugs are that are hatching on the river. So the secret is to get out of the environment, just like a drug addict, right? You don't hang out with the same people that you used to work now that you're not using drugs anymore. So we can partition ourselves a little bit. That helps create the discipline.
That's a very good point, because you always have, you know, option. You put your phone in an airplane mode, but then, you know, you can equally easy take it off the airplane mode and again. But you're right. If you go into nature where you don't have cell reception, at least you have a poor cell reception, or you know, I even said like, if I go for a walk and I put my phone into do not disturb, which doesn't do any notifications, anything, it feels different when I leave the phone at home.
Yeah.
Just leave it at home.
Yeah.
And you feel like I know it might sound cheesy, but I almost feel like I'm free. Like, you're not actually carrying this square box in your pocket. It's not there. Let's talk about now the main thing that you're proposing in your book, and I'm totally on board with that, which is, yes, we have this problem. We can deal with those things in a various way. Airplane mode, do not disturb, focus mode, da-da-da, Pomodoro timers, all those things. People can look it up and use them day-to-day when they at work. But then you have that option that you go out somewhere and, you know, sometimes we're not talking about one day, you say like a couple of days, entire day, maybe longer. So there are a few tips and a few things, few important things that I would like you to elaborate on. And the first of them was, I think it's even title of a chapter, getting support for your solitude or getting support for this disconnection. I would like you to elaborate on that point.
Yeah, it's multidimensional because we live in a complicated world these days. Support for me is getting my staff organized around the fact that I'm going to be out of touch. So that's the first thing. And they know that I'm going to be gone and off grid. If it's something where sometimes I'll do a lone sit for 3 days where I'm not eating, I'm just drinking water and meditating. And then I have somebody, a designated human is what I call it, that comes and checks on me, make sure that, I'm not dead, right? From a distance, they're just checking in, make sure I'm still breathing and moving. And then they're my designated human when I come out and to process and talk about what I experienced. You know, and sometimes it's dramatic and sometimes it's just 3 days by myself and I'm ready to take on the world again. Sometimes I'm ready to go back in for another 3 days.
Yeah, you're just going and say, oh no, I'm coming back.
Yeah, I've changed my mind. So, you know, that level of support. And for other people, it may be that they need to take somebody with them. You know, I've had some comments that, you know, some women don't feel comfortable going out in the woods by themselves. So in that case, the support would be bringing somebody who is on board with the kind of the program and like knowing that they want to spend time by themselves, but also our security for them. So that part, and even the fundamental of always letting people know where you're going to be. So if something does go sideways, you know, I mean, I was in Death Valley one time and I had 4 flat tires and, you know, and the middle of nowhere, you know, so I had to get support from strangers in order to get into town in order to get the help that I needed. So then somebody always knows where you are, right? That's a fundamental in the wilderness.
Yeah, that's security. But I guess there's also support in terms of people in your household or your friends, you know, like you said, being on board that this is who you are, this is what you do. I think this is also important that you get this sort of support.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm lucky enough that my wife understands the demand of this for my life so I can be vital and productive. And so she doesn't, you know, she would rather I was at home, but she understands I need to go out and go on these adventures and spend time by myself or else I'm not a lot of fun to be around.
Yes. Yeah, but you know, on the serious note, that's sort of like a, you know, self-health aspect of it or like a maintenance of your own mind, right? You know, I was talking with it was years ago. I must actually get him back on the podcast. Guy who is running sort of like a for kids who has like anxiety and like a social problems, kind of like a education in the outdoors and you know, getting them overcome obstacles. And he was saying like he is big proponent for everybody to have this, you know, critical thing for you that you do for yourself. That might be, I go fishing, I go golfing, I'll go meditating, I go hunting. And he said something like, you know, when you want to say when you're in the like a traffic light system, green, amber, red, and is it like to find out whether you're an amber or in red, when you stop doing this thing, if you love fishing and you stop fishing, that's a sign that something is wrong, something is not right going on in your life. And you know, it's not like you're very busy and you have a deliver project and you not go fishing because you have a priority. It's not that. It's just like you could, but you're getting this like, I don't even want to do it anymore. And that says like, well, something is wrong with you. Well, not with you, but in, you know, in your environment. And I think that this is pretty much the same thing what you're saying, right? That, oh, I'm doing those things. I'm going to my solitude. And that's also can be this litmus test, like, is everything going okay for you if you still want to do it after a while?
Yeah, if you're still organizing your life correctly, right, and purposefully. And yeah, like you say, sometimes there's events that we, you know, a trade show or a training or something that we're gonna reschedule. But as long as we have the schedule, right? I've heard it like one of the Aboriginal cultures in the United States, their question was, when did you stop dancing? Right? And same idea that you're talking about. And so I've been in those periods where it's like, I got so much going on. I'm like, I don't even feel like putting the effort into going on a scheduled trip. Right? And it's like, that triggers in my brain, like, I need to go now more than ever in order to get recentered and rebalanced and understand what the priorities are.
So we talk about scheduling not only when you're not working, but then you do those trips. How often would you like, so you're talking about like a different thing, like, because there is a one on like a daily cadence and then maybe weekly and maybe once a year. Like, what's your, you know, recommendation or maybe what you're doing yourself?
So my commitment is 1 week a month to be off grid and on some type of adventure. Usually that's by myself. And then, you know, that is kind of like the stabilizing rock for me. And then the dailiness is the daily routine of getting up and immediately spending time in meditation. And that is kind of the glue that holds it all together for me. And then really besides that is that every day I'm outside, spending 10 or 15 minutes at least observing what's going on. And, you know, I'm lucky. I live in the Western United States. I have lots of space around me, in the houses that I live. So, I can see geese flying. I can see quail. I can see rabbits. I can see moving water. And, you know, spending time outside of myself and connecting. Like this morning, we went on the walk at 5:30 and the full moon was still up, right? And the power of that and seeing that on the hillsides, you know, it's powerful and magical every time.
For sure. I would submit for our listeners and viewers that when you live when you live in a city, that's probably even more important to get out of that place, like you said. You know, like I probably said it a few times already on the podcast, but when I started in Ireland and I was living in a town and there was like a, you know, a lot of pressures, you're around like in a new country, new job, new people, like everything is new. And although I didn't feel that way at the time, it was there. And we were going like every couple of weeks fishing to the, like a friend of ours was running fishing lodge. And the moment you step out of the car there on the parking lot in that fishing lodge, it was just like everything was so quiet and calm. And it was unbelievable. And that ties also to like a perception of time. Your perception of time is, you know, I heard that like the things are slowing down when anyone feels that slowing down of time and everything being calmer, like immediately. People who are, and I don't know whether you can confirm that or not, that people who were like even a week or even a month they say that even after being a month somewhere out, they still feel that that time still slows down. That process of slowing down is not over yet. So it's only beginning. I'm sure you can confirm that. You've had the same experiences, right?
Yeah, where it does slow down, and yet we're even it, like I've been on a 21-day hike between Tahoe and Yosemite, and that's a long time, right? I mean, that's a life-changing backpacking trip, but you're still on the clock, right? I still need to know what day it is and where my food cache is and when I'm getting picked up at my end destination. So you're not quite there in the nature time.
Yes.
You're guest in nature time.
Yes, that is true. That is true. So what was the longest, like a proper kind of like a disconnect time that you've been on?
Those 21 days. Yeah, I've done that. I've done that three times.
Long
backpacking trips, and then like 7 to 10 day survival style trips. Those are the longest times.
You're already mentioned this in this podcast, and you also had an entire, I think, chapter in your book again about safety. You know, for sure, there's an aspect of it that you don't want to get in trouble for the guy who wrote this book, and then a bunch of people got lost in the wilderness.
Yeah.
But I guess that is an important thing. So, like you said, all the usual, and I'm sure the people who are, you know, hunting and fishing, which is a lot of listeners of this podcast, they're aware of that. You know, like, tell someone where you're going and when you intend to be back is very important. But you also talk in your book in you know, like a check, daily check or hourly check or whatever. Is that something that is not detracting from the whole experience? Or would you, you know, say like, well, once you're more comfortable and experienced in that, you might, you know, dispense of that? Or like, what are your, you know, your beginner and advanced tips on safety on those trips?
Yeah, I think that's a good observation. Yeah. I think sometimes it's more for the people at home, right? That's what I've observed, is that they have anxiety that you don't have. And so it's part of the planning and the discipline of it. And then eventually, like you're saying, everybody gets a little more comfortable with it. So personally, you know, at this point, I'm not checking in every day. I'm checking in at the beginning, at the end. I do have things like external battery packs, though, to recharge my phone, especially if it's something where I'm using Onyx, some kind of mapping system, and it's going to drain the battery. And I, you know, there's a point where you're going to need your phone again, especially if you're adventuring in a spot that's new. It's to your taste. And I would say the least amount of concern that you can have for checking in, then the more pure your experience is.
You're right. It's an aspect that I didn't thought about, but it's very important, comfort of people at home.
Yeah.
Right? Because like you, just like a zen out there, just times slowed down for you, whatever. And they're at home, they're scrolling their phones and they're like, oh, tourist got mauled by a bear. And he's like, oh my God. which speaks to the aspect of getting support for what you're doing. And also that maybe they could benefit of going with you. What do you think actually about that? Like, because you're talking about a lot about solitude and doing that on your own. But then there, you know, you can take someone with you as well. Is that the same? Is that different? How is that different if you go with someone?
Yeah, it depends on who the someone is, right? And how much maintenance they need. So in some ways, I would be happy to trade all my solitude time to take my family and friends with me or on these places, because every trip changes us. Every real experience changes us. And then if we get to have experiences together and we have a shared history together, then that changes our relationship and deepens our relationship too. So it's and I'm looking forward to it. My grandson right now is 5 going on 6, and I'm looking forward to being able to grab him from his mom and dad and take him for a week and go sit by Hat Creek and teach him to fly fish and make grill steaks and have s'mores and talk about who he is and what he's here to do. So I would trade all my time for that.
How do you would compare the solitude spent on, like you say, meditation, paying attention to things and kind of like looking inside versus the same trip, same time, but you're out, hunting or fishing or like, is that in your mind, is that essentially the same thing or is it slightly different? And what would be that difference if you think it's different?
Yeah, I think it's slightly different for me. And I love all the outdoor activities and participate fully. But, there's this time that I need to go back and say, who am I? What am I here to do? What have I done? How much time do I have left? What are the resources I have to do what I want to do? Right, these value of clarification, and kind of figuring out where I am in the finity, in the finiteness of my life. I can't do that while engaged in activity. I love that, and it is important. But I also have to sit and have those conversations with myself as a check-in and as a course correction and redirection into my life as a human being, because it goes quick and we only get a snapshot of time. And if we get pushed around by the wash too much, we end off course, not going and doing these things that we love for poor reasons.
That's very important what you said, because we often are so busy being busy that we don't even pay attention to our life. Like, go, 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 this. And then it's like, why am I even doing this?
Yeah, right.
What is going on? Why am I so wrapped in, because someone sent me an email? Like, what is, right? Like, what is the relevance of someone sending me a stinky email to my life and everything? And we just so often, just so lost. And again, just to make a circle to what we said at the beginning of this show, that's what's happening on social media. You're down in the rabbit hole of arguing with someone. Like, what are you doing?
Right.
Why are you wasting your time, your health, your everything on just like a stupid, irrelevant thing? It's terrible that we got to this point. But yeah, that's what I'm thinking, that conversation like this one and the books like yours are so important to, at least portion of people will like wake up and at least start examining what is going on with their life, right? Because it is not like switch is like, oh, now I'm this new person. It is like a painful process.
Yeah, I mean, there's an emptiness that we all have, right? There's some lack that we need to fill. And you spend enough time in the pub, enough time trying to buy everything to fill that gap. And eventually you say, well, this unhappiness, this little bit of scratchiness of unhappiness, how am I going to fill that? And you can only answer that for yourself. And you can only answer that for yourself in quiet times with a clear head and to be supported by wind in the trees and moving water is the quickest and easiest way, but it's not an easy process.
It's gradual.
Yeah.
How did you start at this process? Can you go trace that far back?
Yeah, I was fortunate enough that I grew up in a hunting and fishing family, so that groundwork was laid for me as far as prioritizing that at a level. And then in my mid-20s, I got connected with Tom Brown, the tracker, and his work. And I got to spend time with him in some classes And you know, he's one of the living treasures that we still have as far as a direct connection to the Lipan Apache Band of the Southwest of the United States and their traditional techniques and tactics and lifestyle. So not only is he a tracker and a survivalist and able to, you know, teach people these things, but he also talked about their philosophy and spiritual habits and the importance of meditation. And so from there, that's what triggered me into being interested in structuring some meditation into my life and my lifestyle.
And I just wanted one thing that I want to say for people who are listening to this, that meditation is not, you know, there's a lot of people who will say like, oh, some woo kind of woo woo meditation, what are you doing? And there is a lot of like a huge body of peer-reviewed neuroscience about the benefits of meditation. There are very serious studies done at Princeton, at Berkeley, at all the top universities, who are just, it's just undeniably pointing to benefits of meditation, various types of meditations for your mental health, for the focus, for how your hormonal system works, how your endocrine system works, I just wanted to throw it out there because, you know, we said meditations many times, but a lot of people might think that meditation is some sort of like a religious thing. It can be, but it doesn't have to be. It is sort of like an exercise to your mind, like you're exercising your muscles, your biceps, and then it's better off. The meditation is the same way, like an exercise for your mind, after which is better, the mind is better off.
Yeah, that's good. And for the people with the scientific brains who want to dig in and understand the science of meditation, that's where Dr. Joe Dispenza has done the most complete research and continues to do research on medication and showing how meditation affects all the biology of the human body. And he's really the current genius with that.
Yeah, and like you said, meditation could be just paying attention to moving water or just paying attention to moving clouds. You just pay attention to moving clouds or moving water, right? And that's already meditation. Like, do it for 5 minutes. And what's interestingly, if you try to do it for 5 minutes, you might realize how your brain is really like a garbage bag of all the thoughts that then become like really like intruders. You just try to focus on this moving water. And then you realize all the random thoughts that are coming to your brain. It's like, what's up with that?
Yeah, I love that. I mean, starting with 5 minutes a day, going to 15 minutes a day, going to 30 minutes a day, you know, and building the meditation like you would a muscle is really the secret to it.
Yeah, it was, you know, because that allows you to understand then that all your thoughts that you might have and you get upset about something, again, on social media, are nothing more like those same kind of intrusive thoughts that you don't even want to have when you're looking at the water or something like that. Listen, Emmanuel, this is great. And like I said, the subject of the episode is maybe a little bit outside of purely conservation science, but it's very important for me and for all the listeners. Like I said on top of the show, if we are more conscious of what's going on in our minds and with ourselves, then we can more consciously, for example, engage in conversation about wildlife, about conservation, about, you know, topics that we might disagree with someone else, you know, whether it's hunting or whatever else. If we be like a better people ourselves, then we can appreciate other person as well and their points of view, perhaps. Before we wrap this up, what advice would you leave us for listeners, for viewers who are listening to this episode and they go like, yep, there's something. What advice, other than obviously get the book, The seven principles of the magic rock. We'll, as always, put a link in the description of this episode or below the YouTube video. If you're watching that on video, there's going to be a link to the book. But outside of get the book, what other advice, what other words of wisdom you would leave us with?
I would say that the start is to just schedule 15 minutes or 30 minutes every day for yourself, right? And start time blocking and then honoring that commitment you made to yourself and then moving forward into more complicated time blockings to actually let yourself schedule time outside for as long a period as you're comfortable with.
Thank you so much, Emmanuel. It's been great. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Tommy. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave me 5-star rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. This is great help for me and for the podcast. And while you're already there, don't forget to subscribe to my newsletter. The link is in the description of the show.